Magic of Introspection. A thought for today. This is Dr. Hurrell Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California. A wonderful place to be, a wonderful place to live, and a wonderful place to experience life at its fullest. It's interesting that a lot of people who come here to the monastery are interested in knowing what's going on in the monastery. They're interested in knowing how we meditate and how we introspect and how we listen to the divine within. And everybody has a different picture. Everyone has a different story to tell. Everyone has a different way of introspecting and meditating and so forth. And I will go along with all those ways, and I'll recommend ways, and I'll give you many, many more ways, and I'll do my very utmost to confuse you. Because it is a self-program. It is something that you must come to a decision for yourself. I can only suggest ways of thinking about it. You have to try them all out and see which works for you. Some people like to take psychedelic drugs to get on a high, to get on meditation, and to go into their introspective self. But if you were to ask them what they experienced while they were on their high, they couldn't tell you, because they were not in charge. They were not in control of their experience. You talk to people who go into other methods of psychedelic or hallucinogenic experiences, and they have no idea what went on. Oh, they had a great experience, great illumination, great wonderful, but there's no afterwards about it. There's no residualness about it. We want to go into introspection and meditation and remember what we experience. We want to be totally alert. In the Bible, have you ever read anywhere where Jesus took any peyote or he took any drugs or hallucinatory things to help him meditate? Was he ever out of his mind? Was he ever not conscious of what he was doing? Was he always alert and awake? Was he always on top of himself? Now, that's a good model, a role model for us to follow, isn't it? It's a very good role model. Now, you take these gurus from India, super as they are, I don't know, maybe they're not so super. How many of you of them do you know that are not there and not aware of the experiences they go through? Well, none of them. They all seem to be aware, don't they? How many of them do you know that take hallucinogenic drugs? How many of them that you know take any type of a pill or any type of a thing to relax themselves or make themselves at peace or at calm? You see, when you are truly on your spiritual path, and there are many on the spiritual path, but anyone who takes drugs is not on a spiritual path. They're on a human, physical path because they're knocking off their body. They're knocking off their physical self. We are looking to be aware of our divine inner self, which in turn makes our physical self all the more beautiful. But we do not go and blow our physical mind, and we do not go and get after our human self to make it change so that we can get into our inner self. True, we might say we want to become peaceful, quiet, and calm, but when you read the February Serendipity, you'll have all sorts of interesting ideas coming to your mind about this. And one of these ideas we'll dwell upon a little bit this morning. And that's the idea of what happens when you are in introspection. Are you dead? Are you out of it? Are you sleeping? Are you unaware? Well, if you are, you're not in introspection. Introspection means to be an alive, alert, aware, listening to the divine within you, to your God self. And if you're alive, alert, and aware of listening to your divine inner self, you are awake. You are totally awake. You are not in an out-of-body journey, which in itself is kind of a fun thing to do now and then, but has nothing to do with meditation. It has nothing to do with introspection. It has nothing to do with oneness with your divine self. Your divine self is sort of a—what would you say? It's an all-inclusive thing. It sort of When you are at one with your divine self, you are like wrapped up in a cozy blanket. You are totally snuggled in there, and you are harmonious with it, and you are happy with it, and you are content with it. You feel just alive, alert, aware, enthusiastic about life. You just feel great. So, many people have great introspective experiences. Many. Many, many. And many of them are artists, writers, painters, creators of various things, scientists, people who just forget themselves and move into their inner level of awareness. Now they may be walking along the street. Boom! An idea hits them. They've tuned in. They've tuned in. They've let go of all the other. They can't tell you where they've been. They can't tell you what their body's been doing. They can only tell you what they experienced inside. They will walk properly. They will move to where they will go. They will not put themselves in harm's way. They will be harmonious with their outer, but they'll be aware of their inner. Now, we said that a person going into introspection is not asleep. He's not unconscious. He's not in a trance. And this, I believe, is very true. However, you drive your car, and you have no idea what cars are around you. You have no idea how fast the speed limit is. You have no idea what's going on. You just are driving your car. And if someone says to you, "Did you see that red car go by there just a second ago?" Nope. You saw it, but that was not where your concentration was. You were fully aware. You could have clicked back a few frames in your consciousness and remembered the red car, but you don't. And Ellen oftentimes says, "My goodness sakes, here we are home already. What happened to the miles?" Well, the miles just went away because we were in conversation, or we were thinking, or we were meditating, or we were totally aware of our driving. Totally aware of our driving. Never think of it that you're not aware of your outer world that you're in. But living in that inner consciousness. Now, what happens when you connect with your divine self, when you connect with your inner consciousness? What happens? Well, what happens is that you go crazy. And I don't mean that in a negative way. You just get so excited over what's taking place because you have creative imagination that's pouring through you, just wanting to come out. You can't stop, like the artist who cannot stop to eat or drink or go to the bathroom even. He's just soaring away with his magic. Or Emily Brontë, as she was doing her writing, she would get so lost in her writing and so aware of that divine source that was revealing all these wonderful things to her that she didn't even know what time it was. But she set her mental alarm clock so that she would be where she wanted to be when she wanted to be there. And the mental alarm clock would go off, and the dream world, the imagination world, the creative world just went into a sleep mode and waited until she returned. And she could go on with her physical life in a very normal way. Now, you can be sure that Michelangelo was the same way. Michelangelo was a fool, an idiot, just an outrageous idiot. He would be lying on this scaffolding high on the Sistine Chapel, painting away. And he would be thinking of the painting, and he'd be moving from side to side. The scaffolding was always underneath him. He never fell. You understand? He never fell, even though his concentration was on revealing the magic of the divine story from the Bible on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. He had no idea where there was any step or where the planks were not. His staff made sure the planks were there. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he wasn't concerned. He just moved. And look, how many times did he get paint in his eyes? Once or twice when he was angry at the Pope. When he was angry at the Pope and he was angry at what was happening, then the paint fell in his eyes. He painted that entire Sistine Chapel. My God, he would have been blind if paint had fallen in his eyes all the time. He could not have done it. But it only fell when he was human, when he was living in his human anxiety. And you see, when you and I live in our human anxiety, we turn off our divine circuitry. How did Emerson say it? Get your bloated nothingness out of the way of the divine circuits. You see, we get our human self in the way of our divine circuits, and then we wonder why this meditation means nothing. Why introspection is sleepy time, you know? Well, it's sleepy time because you're not connecting. Once you connect, you go, you're vibrating alive and wow, 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 wow. And you don't ever want to come down. You're aware, but you don't want to come down. And you say, oh, I could die in this state. And happily. Because this is the essence of all that I really want. But we come back, and then we go back and experience it again and have a great time. But this is meditation, this is introspection. And when you move into that divine zone, the quiet healing zone, quiet divine zone, that might be a good book too. But you move into that divine zone of your inner awareness, and you feel so great. You feel, can you imagine how Michelangelo felt as these beautiful images were floating through his mind and he was with the genius to put them up on the ceiling? Can you imagine how Titian and Raphael and Mozart and Beethoven felt as they were creating this wonderful music? They were not creating anything. Nothing's ever created. They were revealing it. It was always there. And they merely tapped into that source of all knowledge, wisdom, and understanding in music. And they just revealed it. Now, this is what we can do. But I guarantee you, if you say, I always fall asleep when I meditate. I always fall asleep when I'm introspecting. Introspection is the hardest thing in the world for me to do. You're no artist. You're no genius. You're no one with allness. Because when you touch that one with allness feeling inside yourself, you couldn't think of saying, I have a hard time meditating or introspecting. The only reason you have a hard time meditating or introspecting, or the only reason I ever have a hard time doing it, is because I'm so bound up with my earthly world, with my day-to-day activities, which are not bad, but I'm bound up with them. And I let them control me. But remember, when you leave the house and you think, did I turn the gas off on the stove? Why do you ask that question? Because you were in another world. You were in another emotional setup, and you were not. Now, all you have to do is say, did I or didn't I? And duck, duck, duck. You back up a couple frames in your consciousness and you see it turned off. And this is why I say to you, cover the Swimmix when you finish swimming in it. If you're the last one in the Swimmix, you don't cover it while other people are still going in it, but you cover it if you're the last one in the Swimmix. Then you will know it's done. If you are driving down the road and you don't put the brake on and somebody put the brake on and you, what the heck is wrong with this here? Oh, somebody put the brake on. Well, if it's your habit not to put it on, then you must always be aware. If somebody else drives it, they might do it. And not be upset about it. Just take it off. It's rather have it on than off, from the point of view that should the car want to roll, then it would be inhibited from doing it. But we must be very careful with ourselves. We must recognize, if we want introspection, if we want meditation, and most people don't, they will find time to get excited about listening within, about the drama of the music of themselves. Why does anyone want to be creative? Why do you admire, that's the word, there it is. Now, why do you admire an artist? Why do you admire a composer? Why do you admire a storyteller? Why do you admire John? John gets up here and he tells these most delightful stories with a beautiful continuity to the characters. He's excellent at it. Now, why do you admire him? You admire him because he is in his story. He's in you too. He knows what's going to touch you and what's going to make you feel very happy and very part of the story. But he's in his story. He lives that story. He lives in that's an introspection for him. He doesn't know that. Maybe he does. But that's an introspection. Living in the story you're telling. So that you, like on the Sistine Chapel, you have this beautiful picture in your mind and you're transferring it from your mind to there. You know? Fantastic. Are you ready for such a thing? Are you ready for such an introspection that lets your divine inner self just live? Can you imagine if every person, or even most of them, if every person on the face of the earth were to live in their introspective self, one as their divine self, one in their divine self, through their divine self, what a world this would be. Everybody would be having fun being themselves, and it would be harmonious with everybody else. One of the reasons it'd be harmonious with everybody else is because nobody is sticking their business in anybody else's business. Everybody would be so excited with their own world. Now, you don't need to have food, clothing, houses, heat, warm. You don't need any of those things when you're in your divine introspection. Now, you say, well, it is kind of nice to be cozy. Okay, but you don't need any of those things, because once you tune in to your divine self, you will be fulfilled in every aspect of your being, physical, mental, spiritual. Once you tune in to your divine reality, to your divine introspective self, you will be fulfilled. And you cannot conceive of what fulfilled means, because you've never experienced it yet. Some people have, but they are just totally at peace, harmonious, balanced with life, and everything is great. You look at a lot of people walking down the street, not walking down, you look at a lot of people that you've met in life, and they are so beautiful. You just say, my goodness, you know, they're an angel. They're fabulous. They're glorious. They're in tune. They're fulfilled in every way. Have you ever thought to talk to them and say, you know, you're great. How come you're so fulfilled? Did you ever think that? No. Because they are beyond your reach. They're beyond your reach because you think, man, if I could only be so good like they are, if I could only be so wonderful like that person is, that illumined person. Now, you say, Marie, what's her name? she is the Mother Teresa. Marie. You think of Mother Teresa and you think, what an illumined soul. Well, she wasn't really. What she did outwardly was nothing. It was absolutely nothing. What she did inwardly was everything. She went to each person and she gave them an experience of eternal love, unconditional love. That was their healing medicine, to heal their soul. They didn't need to worry about healing their body. Their bodies were alive or dead, it didn't matter. But she reached to their soul with this unconditional love. We say, ah, she wasn't so great. She did this. Oh, is that what your human self is telling you? Is that what your human self is telling you? Do you look at Hitler and you say, oh, what an ugly person. Or do you look at Hitler and say, what an illumined soul. What a magical being he was. He did some things that were not magical, but he was magical. If he could have only been true to himself, he would have been great. But you see, there was a little bee that got in there, a little something out of order, and it said, you're better than everybody else. You're the one race. You're this. And you see, that little bee, that messed up his genius. He's a genius, obviously. I mean, anybody who could take a whole nation and whip them into a frenzy to accomplish his goal must be rather remarkable.
Yeah.
Now, that he had a goal that was a little different from what many people would like, that's another thing. But yet, all of Germany liked it. They followed him. And he was a magic man. Now, I'm not saying the things he did was right. I'm not saying the things he did was wrong. I'm just saying the things that he did were not harmonious with many people. So therefore, we judge him. But why did the Romans take it offense, and the priests in the time of Jesus take such an offense at him wanting to be the king of the Jews? Why? Now, that's an evil, terrible thing. He should be killed for it. And they did. Why did they take such an offense at it? Was that slaughtering the Jews? Was that the Holocaust for the Jews? No. Did the priests think it was a Holocaust for the Jews? Did the Romans think it was an invasion? Well, the Romans said, hey, we got nothing against the guy. These messiahs come and go like popcorn, you know, no big deal. But the priests had a hang-up. They felt their territory was being treaded upon. And they felt that one of their own, he was a priest like them, he was a rabbi like them, and they felt that he had gone astray, and so he should be put away. This happens many times, and it's an in-house type of thing, where the house doesn't grow to meet the needs, to meet the expansion. Do you think the Pope appreciated Michelangelo? He just thought he was a great painter. He had no idea what Michelangelo was putting on that ceiling. He had no idea the dimension of the story that was being told there. He had no idea the beauty that would be eternally everlasting. He had no idea of that. He didn't realize that he paid this painter, who is good, to do that. He said, I'd rather have you cut my gravestone. You know? You see, even in our own time, people won't appreciate us. Even in our own world, people will not appreciate us as we seek to find the divine within all. And they will say, you have some ulterior purpose, you have some ulterior motive. Don't let that bother you. Be yourself and have fun. Be your joyous, wonderful self. But don't be an idiot. Don't say that my joyous self is doing one thing, and then 10 minutes later you say it's doing another. Don't say you're coming to the monastery to follow the program here, and then say, I don't like the program. Well, you may leave. There's nothing holding you here. But if you love the program, then stay. And we can always make the program stronger and more beautiful and more powerful, you know? Because as you develop into your spiritual awareness, you'll want the program to be more pure. Sylvia, no air conditioning. Ellen, no heating. Ingeborg, no eating. Yeah, you shake your shoulders and say, yeah, I can conceive that there could be such a thing. But you see, for anyone new coming here who wasn't in harmony with what we were arriving at in our consciousness, they'd say, no food, no air conditioning, no heating, my goodness sakes. You know, what is this place? Well, obviously, it's not a place for you. You go to the places where they have heat and air conditioning and food, and we do currently. We do. But the day will come in our consciousness where this is not necessary anymore. But only as we move into the state of introspection and become so one with it. Do you think Michelangelo had his heater on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel? Do you think that he had his lunch served to him by his butler? Do you think that he had his little potty can up there so he didn't have to climb up and down each time he had to go to the bathroom if he did? Do you think that he was irritated by the talking of the other assistants that he had up there? Not at all. Not at all. He was not there. He was in his imagination, in his creativity, in his genius. And this is where I would like each of us to walk more surely into our imagination, our genius, our awareness of the divinity that we are. Because you guys are great. That's why you're here. No one comes here who isn't ready to walk that path. So, walk that path. You too. Mm-hmm. And no one is too old or too young. Whether they're 3 years old, like Anita, or whether they're 10 years old, like Jerome, or whether they're 100 years old or 500 years old, like Dodie here. Ageless. It doesn't matter. We all are here to walk our spiritual path and to have the time of our life doing it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I love you.
Mm-hmm.